How would you react if someone walked up to you and began talking about their undergarments? This is everyday life for Sarah Blakely. In fact, she enjoys checking out what people have under their clothing. Why? Because Sarah is the founder of Spanx, the maker of slimming undergarment apparel. In 2012, Sarah was named the world's youngest self-made female billionaire by Forbes magazine and has been listed as one of Time's 100 most influential people. Spanx isn't just a product, it's a cultural phenomenon. Behind that phenomenon is a fun-loving, laid-back, confident woman who was just trying to solve her own problem and ended up a billionaire entrepreneur. We are pleased to have Sarah on the cover of this month's issue and with us here to get to know the woman underneath the Spanx, so to speak. Sarah, welcome to our set here at Success.
Thanks for having me.
So Sarah, just to help get to know you a little bit better before we explore your business expertise, and we're going to talk a little bit about the journey it took for you to get here, but if you had to just describe yourself in only 4 key words, what do you think those words would be?
4 words, huh? I would describe myself as driven, courageous, inventive, and tired. I'm so tired. But if you were to ask me that question in the 80s, my 4th word would have been funny, but I really stopped being funny in the 80s because I think I'm just tired. So my 4th word is tired, but driven, courageous, and inventive for sure.
Wonderful. So I remember reading the story that after you graduated from Florida State University that you struggled to find a job. You ended up working at Disney World, and then you thought about going to law school, but you crashed and burned on the LSAT. And so then the only job that you could find was selling fax machines door to door and basically doing cold calling sales. Explain how that experience in particular helped you when you started and went about building your billion-dollar business.
I believe that cold call selling taught me so much. It's one of the most unbelievable life experiences that I think a person can have as far as preparing you for business and especially being an entrepreneur. I mean, it definitely taught me not to take no for an answer because I was cold calling all day, every day, and only basically hearing the word no. It taught me how to get my foot in the door quickly. I learned through that job that mistakes or moments of embarrassment are usually just make you memorable. And oftentimes becoming memorable helped you get the sale. So I stopped having any kind of fear of trying to be perfect, which was very liberating. And, you know, all of that was so helpful when I started Spanx because I heard the word no for the first 2 years of trying to get my product made. So it was a really great training ground.
Well, like me, I believe that your dad had a profound impact on you in terms of your willingness to try hard and then bounce back from failure. Tell us about that. What did your dad do or say that impacted you so great later in life?
Well, growing up, my dad would actually encourage my brother and me to fail. And so we would sit at the dinner table and my dad would actually say, "What'd you guys fail at this week?" And if we didn't have something, he'd actually be disappointed. And I can remember coming home and saying, Dad, you know, I tried out for this and I was horrible. And he'd give me a high five and say, "Way to go." So I didn't realize it at the time, but what he was doing was completely reframing my definition of failure. And failure became about not trying versus the outcome.
So then, Sarah, tell us, what have you failed at this week?
Let's see. What have I failed at this week? I failed to stop eating French fries.
Well, luckily, there's this great undergarment that I know of that will help you out, save you in that
pinch. Oh, I totally set you up for that.
Our audio producer, Richard, here said, "Well, she's got an expanding market." And I said, "Yeah, but she's trying to create a restriction on that expanding market of obesity here." So, Sarah, I also read where you said that your father was influenced by the now, unfortunate, late, great Wayne Dyer, and that is where his lesson in the power of failure came from. So who has influenced you the same way that Wayne Dyer influenced your father, aside from your father, obviously?
I mean, I would have to answer Wayne Dyer. I mean, you know, my dad exposed me to Wayne Dyer when I was 16 years old, and I had just I just witnessed a tragic accident and you know, I lost a very good friend in that tragic accident. And then shortly after that, my parents got separated. So it was a really hard time for me at a really confusing time for most people at 16. And my dad handed me the cassette tape series, How to Be a No Limit Person by Wayne Dyer, and said, I wish I had listened to this when I was your age instead of being 40 when I discovered it. And so I started listening to it, and I listened to Wayne all throughout from 16 on. He was always in my car. All my friends would always joke at the end of, you know, going out for a party and say, don't end up in Sarah's car. She's going to make you listen to all that motivational stuff. So he had a huge impact on me personally as well.
Well, I hope all the dads out there are listening and will have that kind of influence with their young children as well. I mean, obviously, it seemed to have worked out. So obviously then, Sarah, personal development is something you've had exposure to for your whole life, all the way since your youth. Share a few of the things that you're doing now every day or every week that makes sure that you're including some sort of personal development in your life and in your continued growth.
Well, I think one of the most important things I've identified for personal development is just alone time and time to think. And when do I have the most clarity? When do I feel the most connected to gut? And I've identified for me, it's in the car, and it's often with just background music playing. And there's something about the, you know, the task of driving that I really get clarity in my thinking and can relax enough to access really important thoughts. And so I've been faking a commute every morning. It's what my friends call it, my fake commute, because I live 5 minutes from Spanx, but I factor in another 40 minutes to sometimes an hour before I have to be at the office and simply drive around Atlanta thinking. So I would say factoring in think time is a huge component for me and my personal development. And another thing I do to honor personal development, either weekly or daily, is that I truly take a conscious moment and take myself off autopilot. And I love to ask myself the question, if I didn't know how to do this, how would I do it? Because I realize that everybody's doing things the way somebody else taught us to do it, or somebody else showed us how to do it. And true greatness and really interesting ideas come when you just stop and you ask yourself that question. Sometimes I'll even close my eyes and ask myself that, and the things that come up are always really interesting. And so I always challenge myself to see things differently. Like even if it's a table, I'll look at a table and just start saying, why is the table made that way? And who made it that way? And why? What was their thinking behind that? And so I'm always trying to foster seeing things differently and getting myself off autopilot.
I want to talk about risk here, and I want to talk about both sides of it, because an interesting thing that I read about you is that when you started Spanx, all the way into 2 years in the development of your business, you kept your day job until, I think it was 2000, when Oprah came on and said that Spanx was one of her favorite things, and then you finally made the transition wholeheartedly. And one of the business trademarks that is known about you is that you tend to take risks on people that you bring into the business to work with. In fact, I think it was your first CEO where you met her while shopping one day. So tell us, why take the risk when there's essentially $1 billion at stake?
Well, I think it's a trade-off either way. So if you hire someone who has years and years and years of experience, oftentimes they come to the position with a preconceived notion of how it should be done, but they also have this breadth of experience and knowledge that can be very helpful. And if you hire someone who's never done it before and is really passionate, they're going to have a lot of new, fresh, completely out of the box ideas, but they're going to have to learn along the way. So I've hired, you know, surrounded myself with both kinds of people, but I tend to lean towards hiring passionate people who are optimistic, who have overall intelligence and are really resourceful. And then I get quiet with myself and check in with my gut.
So Sarah, in 2010, you launched an initiative inside of Spanx called Leg Up, which is to help female entrepreneurs. Tell us about that initiative and why you started it.
Well, I always was headed in that direction. I've wanted to help women since I can remember when I was little. So Spanx came about to get me to where I ultimately wanted to be. So as soon as I started making any additional money, I was so excited to set aside a portion of it to further help women. And You know, it's just been a part of my journey. So Spanx wasn't really a means to an end. It's been a platform to get me to where I ultimately wanted to be. I just did not know I was going to start with women's butts. That's the one part of the journey that really kind of surprised me, but it was a good place to start. And the reason I wanted to start the foundation and that it's important to me is I just feel so much gratitude for being a woman born in America. I was just happened to be born in the right time, in the right country. I had no control over that. And so it's about paying my gratitude forward. So I'm actually really excited about our Leg Up program at Spanx. And what we've been doing is because I had this Oprah moment where she held up Spanx and said, this is my favorite thing, I got all this great exposure that I couldn't afford at the early stage of my business. So now that I've got Spanx and this platform of millions and millions of women who are receiving my catalog, coming to our website, Leg Up is a way to pay my Oprah moment forward and give other entrepreneurs exposure at a time that's critical for them, for their product or their business. So we choose people who submit their products to Spanx and we highlight them in our social media channels and on our website and in our catalog for free in just hopes that their star starts to shine brighter and they take off faster also.
So Sarah, like any entrepreneur, you live a pretty dynamic and some would call hectic lifestyle. On top of that, you married another entrepreneur, Jesse Itzler, co-founder of Marquee Jet. So give us an insider look at an entrepreneurial marriage. How do the two of you make it work with your lives always seemingly on the move?
Well, I would describe an entrepreneurial marriage that we mostly discuss ideas. There's a lot of discussion of ideas going on in our house. There's very little discussion about other people. There's very little discussion even about events. It's pretty much ideas. And we deeply understand each other. And so, you know, if my husband came home from work one day and said, honey, I have completely figured out something or an idea that's going to change the world, I would not be someone that would roll my eyes. I would, you know, immediately go, what is it? You know, and believe them. So I think it's having a partner that believes in you and gives room for your ideas where other people might think it's crazy. We also have such a true partnership where we really share all the responsibilities inside of the home. And then one thing that we always do, if we cannot agree on something, which does happen, we rock, paper, scissors.
Huh. That's great. I mean, I guess
it's not underestimate rock, paper, scissors. It can really just, you know, help out.
I love it.
Although he's better at rock, paper, scissors than I am. So I feel like I might need to come up with a different truce.
A different device.
Yeah, different truce game.
Now, isn't it ironic, though, that you married somebody who is the co-founder of Marquee Jet when you, I read, have or had, you can tell us which, a significant fear of flying?
I still have a significant fear of flying and I am afraid of heights. And it is ironic that I married Jesse Itzler, being the founder of a private jet company. But I don't know what to say other than it's just he's so entertaining to be married to. But I do still have a fear of flying. I have a good luck song I listen to during takeoff. Sometimes I still cry during takeoff. And I do it anyway.
You know, it's another thing that I found funny when researching you is that you had an apartment on the 37th floor in New York, but you also have a fear of heights. And you had a Navy SEAL design you emergency escape routes from your 37th floor apartment. Do you still have that fear as well?
Okay, so there's a story there, Darren, because I did not hire a Navy SEAL to give us escape routes, but my husband came home one day and said, honey, do you mind if a Navy SEAL moves in with us for 30 days and gets me in really good shape? And I said, no. So about 3 days later, I had a Navy SEAL sitting at my breakfast table and lived with us for 30 days. So he, while he was living with us and training my husband, he had a lot of safety tips and ideas that he shared with us. And
That's great.
That was a very interesting chapter. And yes, I have a fear of heights. I did live on the 37th floor. And after I closed on the apartment, I had a real moment where I thought I might have to put it up for sale or return it. And my husband kept saying, why didn't you think of this before?
Wow.
But I ended up overcoming it.
Yeah, a good thing. I guess 6 years later, more than doubled in value. So that in itself was fantastic. That's what you get when you tackle your fears. So besides the rock, paper, scissor method of arguing or coming to a decision, what other
I like that
tip,
better. Yeah,
what other tips would you have on how to build your family life while you're building your business?
I mean, that is, I'm a work in progress on that for sure. And I would say that it is critical to take the time to prioritize, to know what you want to delegate. And then once you decide what you're going to delegate, you let it go.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, another thing I just have to verify of that I read about you. Do you still drive a Toyota minivan?
Yes, I drive a minivan and I love it. It's the bomb.
I know that your staff.
I'm like the cool mom. My six-year-old's like, oh my God, we have a minivan.
So, Sarah, it's just like the rest of those out there. That's wonderful. So tell us more about the behind the scenes, maybe about you and your downtime when you let your hair down, take off the Spanx, so to speak, and just let it all hang out. What does a billionaire entrepreneur do to unwind? I only ask because those that I've talked to in the past, they all seem to be going, you know, nonstop. And, you know, I get the impression that you do take time away from the business. What is that like? And why do you feel it's important to just step back, take it all in and take some time away?
Well, I definitely do take time to step away from the business. And that's really about, I always say, as soon as I could afford to hire my weaknesses, I did. I mean, every entrepreneur, when you're first starting your business, you're everything. I was the packer and shipper. I was doing the, you know, accounting. I was selling. I was the before and after butt model. And I learned very quickly what I'm good at, what I'm not good at, what I enjoy and what I don't enjoy. And they're usually the same thing. So I have such a great team, and I've been able to delegate a lot of the positions that are not my core strengths and let people shine and do a much better job than I ever could in those. So that gives me some more freedom now that the business is more established. And my greatest luxury of how I spend my downtime is thinking. It's truly, I could almost say thinking is a hobby. I love it so much. I love to just let my mind wander, and I find it a great luxury, especially now that I have three boys under the age of six.
Wow.
An even bigger luxury.
That is a high volume household, no doubt. So as we start to wind this up, Sarah, I just want to do some rapid fire questions. Just again, to get to know you a little bit and put some